cell by cell through bodies and mind screens of the earth. Souls rotten from the orgasm drug, flesh shuddering from the ovens, prisoners of the earth, come out, storm the studio. Burnt metal smell of interplanetary war in the raw noon streets, swept by screaming glass blizzards of enemy flak. Shift lingual, spray doorways, cut word lines, photo falling, word falling, breakthrough in gray room. Towers, open fire.
Citizen, you are listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
Tilt, blast, pound, stab, strap, kill. Pilot K-9, you are cut off. Back. Return to base immediately. Ride music beam back to base. Stay out of that time flak. All pilots, ride pan pipes back to base.
Fairgrounds were crowded and Stewball was there, but the betting was heavy on the bay and the mare. Well, I bet on the bay mare, and I bet on the gray. If I'd a bet on old Stewball, I'd be a free man today. This is Jane Smiley. You can't listen to Dead Writers, but you can listen to Living Writers on WCBN-FM Ann Arbor.
Welcome to this special edition of the Living Writers Show with special guest The Liz hosting an interview with the trumpet player from Too Many Zoos, a band that plays what they call brass house music. So it's about music, yes. It also is an interview that touches on the writing of music, and the trumpet player is indeed alive. Too Many Zoos came to visit Ann Arbor and played in at the Blind Pig not too long ago. So while T has vacated the hot seat, this is what we get in the meantime here at WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Thank you for listening to The Living Writers Show. Hello, can you hear me?
Sure, yeah. Is this good? Can you hear me well enough?
Okay, good. So thank you for talking with me.
Yeah, totally.
And so would you mind just introducing yourself and giving the lowdown on the band and what your role is in it? Anything that you want to say introduction-wise?
Yeah, I'm Matt Doe. I play trumpet with Too Many Zoos. And Too Many Zoos, we're a band from New York City. We started playing music in the subway. And now, fast forward 6 years, and we're touring the world, and I'm currently sitting in a studio making a record.
Ooh. So where's your favorite place that you've been? You said you went from New York City to touring the world. What's the hot spot?
My favorite place I've ever been. Every place is different and special in its own way. I don't think one's necessarily better than the other. I have places that I love going. But I think that's more just based on the things that I like there. And, you know, I love Los Angeles, I love New York, I love London. But yeah.
Yeah. And when you're
it's
in,
it's hard to say to just make one my favorite. Doesn't feel fair to the others.
That's kind of you. 'Cause when you're on tour too, you're not really like experiencing the city per se. You're feeling a vibe of a crowd from that place on a night.
Yeah, exactly.
Too Many Zoos started by busking on the subway in New York City. So what's your favorite stop on the subway to play with the band?
Union Square.
And why is that?
Why is Union Square? I don't know. I think it's just where we started and where we played the most. So it's just kind of our home in the subway.
And maybe, have you been to Ann Arbor yet? Michigan?
No, I have not.
Maybe that'll become your favorite spot, hands down.
Maybe.
So we should mention that I'm talking with you because you are coming here. And so hopefully our listeners will go to the show at the Blind Pig on Monday, February 11th, sometime in the evening. Too Many Zoos with a Z.
That is correct. Too Many Zoos with a Z.
So we're excited that you're coming here. I was wondering if you play in subways and in public transportation or like on street corners in other cities, or do you limit yourself to venues?
I mean, we used to a lot more just because we had more time. But nowadays we don't really do much of that, just because of the heavy touring schedule we're doing and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about your musical background?
Yeah, I grew up playing music in church and in band at school and stuff like that. And yeah, I had a very intensive classical and jazz upbringing in some ways, but I was also super, super into rock music and hip hop music, and then eventually electronic music and, stuff that people made on computers and stuff like that. So I don't know. I had a wide variety of stuff going on in my musical upbringing, but then eventually I went to Manhattan School of Music in New York, and that was cool, but it kind of made me in some ways move away from that conservatory, jazz, classical, fine arts world, and pushed us in some ways to do too many dudes. So,
can you explain that? What did it push you toward exactly? I mean, you went to school and it pushed you toward playing on the subway?
When I went to school, I was super into jazz, and I thought I was going to be this jazz trumpet player or something. And I had gotten into electronic music in high school a little bit. And then when I got to school, I don't know how to explain this. The way school worked was, for me, was I felt it was this very competitive vibe, and super old school traditional mentality on music, in the sense that you shouldn't try new things and that you should play this way because this person said so, and this is what they sound like in X, Y, and Z, and all the reasons why. And I just didn't really agree with that, and for a multitude of reasons, but so it just pushed me away from that music in some ways, because I associated that music with those things, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, because of that, I started getting way more into electronic music, and then things, you know, hip hop and what I was listening to when I was a kid kind of became way more relevant in my life again. You know, and I feel in some ways Leo felt similarly. I can't really speak for him. But we went to school together, and it was an escape for us. It was there was no rules and there was no competition. It was just us playing music and having fun.
And just to clarify for anybody listening who's not well-versed yet in too many zoos, Leo is the sax player, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. So did you guys finish your degrees at Manhattan School of Music?
Leo did. I did not.
How'd that feel when you stepped away? Was that scary at all?
I think I was more scared before I did it. And then by the time I was dropping out, I mean, it's kind of stupid because I dropped out with 6 weeks of school left. I was already working pretty heavily playing with bands and, you know, doing a few tours and stuff like that. So, and I was so scared of dropping out for so long. And then eventually I was just what drove me to do it was taking a tour, and I went to all my teachers and, you know, I had done my work or whatever, but I had missed so much school for work. And basically one of my teachers was hey, you know, I'm going to fail you or whatever if you take this thing. And I was just man, this is a joke. I came here to work, and now you guys are actively trying to stop me, you know? So I just left school, and I was just man, this is just, I'm already working. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't really scary at that point. But before then, I was just kind of dreading it and thinking about it and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And you just picked a way and went your own way, and it's worked out.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someday I'll go back and finish or whatever. But yeah, right now it's working.
Yeah, well, good. So what do you do or watch or experience to get inspiration?
I mean, everything. I think music or any sort of expressive artistry is really just an expression of emotion, right? So anything that you're going to find inspiration from is just anything in your life. It could be music or something you watch or some food you eat or a girl you like or whatever. But it's just like, I think the beauty of it is finding inspiration in everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think has molded you into the musician that you've been, or what is the most recent thing that you can remember being excited to tell a friend about?
What is the most recent thing I've been excited to tell a friend about? That is a really good question. I don't know. I try and get excited about everything I do. You know, I'm constantly in the studio and just making records and stuff. So for me as a producer, every time I'm doing that, I'm trying to imagine this song in a stadium, right? Like that, for me, that's how I want to approach it, because I want to think big. And I feel like in some ways, the only way to have that happen is to have that mentality, right? So it's just a matter of, I don't know, just taking that approach with everything. Mm-hmm. Just being excited about everything that you do and loving what you do and being grateful for the opportunity to get paid to make music and tour around the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome.
Listening to your songs, you call it Brass House. So it does have that sort of DJ kind of electronic element to it. And then there's also like parts where you break away, you know, and there's like a crazy sax solo, or there's some sort of structure to it. So I guess I'm just curious about how you approach making a new track. Do you think about it at all as a composition or an arrangement, or is it whatever feels fun, or is it like you think about spinning records, or what, how do you approach?
Well, I think when you're in the studio and you're making a record like that, you have I have a different approach than when I'm playing live, obviously, just because you're creating something for two different groups of people in some ways. You know, you want your records to feel live and feel human and stuff like that. But when we're performing, for us, it's like we want to be like a DJ, where the party never stops and the music's always going and flowing into the next song. And there's a sense of like, oh, this is just like a cool party, right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then when I'm in the studio, I guess for me personally, I have a much more like pop mentality and approach to that sort of thing. So guys like Max Martin and whatever, and all those 90s producers were huge inspiration, just the song form and stuff like that, you know, the classic whatever pre-chorus, verse, pre-chorus, double chorus at the end kind of thing, like, and a cool, and the bridge is like the best part of the tune, or ideally, right? So it's like those sort of things were hugely inspirational to me as a producer, just because those are the songs I grew up listening to and loving. And I think as a songwriter and a producer, you in some ways, the more you do it, if you write whatever, 1,000 songs, you just have the same process that, you know what I mean? In some ways, formulaic in like the most beautiful way, because you get past that part of the creativity and bring it to another level where you can express yourself. And it's like you can now focus on the things, in my mind, that really make a song a great song.
Yeah, I get that. That's helpful. It's like, you're not kind of distracted by the sort of protocol of a beginning writer. You can...
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, you know, I know tons of people that are not a fan of being formulaic and having those sort of things in their writing. But for me, it's... And just on a pragmatic level, it's so productive. Because again, you're just eliminating a part of that process in some ways. You know, you still want to be creative with it and write a great song, but you're not eliminating it. You're just fast tracking it because you're familiar with the recipe, you know?
Yeah. You've honed that part.
Right. Exactly.
I just want to remind everybody who's listening that you, Matt Doe, and Too Many Zoos are coming to Ann Arbor to play at the Blind Pig on Monday, February 11th. And so maybe this is a good time to take a break and play one of your tracks.
Yeah. What song?
What song do you want?
What about maybe like Warriors? I like that song.
Okay, I like that song too. You played with Beyonce and the Dixie Chicks on stage at the Country Music Awards in 2016, I think, like the other year. So, I mean, well, first of all, do you have any impressions that you want to share about that?
Yeah, I always say this when we talk about this stuff in interviews, like I have nothing but the nicest things in the world to say about all of those people, Beyonce, the Dixie Chicks, their teams and people working with them and everyone that worked with us, like amazing experience, just super grateful to have been able to do it. Yeah.
So I've gone to a show of yours in Ferndale in Michigan, and I've gone to a couple shows of Beyonce, and
nice.
And they're both fabulous. And in their own ways, it seems like you guys might be a little more improvisational, whereas Beyonce definitely has something going on. Like, it's a very directed,
sure.
Like, she has envisioned something for her show.
Yes.
And so I was just curious, you guys had a rehearsal before the performance, and I'm just curious, when she invites people on stage to perform with her, I'm curious about if her vision applies to the guests on stage. So did she have direction
Absolutely,
for you guys?
Absolutely, yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you're working with an artist like that, you, at least me, I have the mentality that we're there to serve the artist. And you have to trust that process because it's historically so great and you know it's going to be great. And so you're just a part of a puzzle that is going to be awesome. And that, for me, I'm just thankful to be a piece in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I can't speak for other artists and stuff like that, but at least in my experience, I would say that we were there absolutely to, you know, help serve better to their show, which I was more than happy to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, it's like putting on any big show, right? You want, especially when TV's involved, there's just a lot of people that want to make the show as great as it can look, which is exactly what you want to do when you have a televised event that millions of people are watching. I mean, it is a very detailed process, obviously. But again, it's just part of what that world is when you're doing TV stuff and you're doing as big of a performance as she always does and as perfect as it is and amazing, you have to have that attention to detail, you know? That's what makes that show so amazing.
Yeah.
And what separates her as a truly iconic artist.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you look at any iconic artist throughout time, and that's the sort of detailing and attention to those little minute things that separate those people in history from being good to great to amazing.
And so is that something that you are conscious of applying to what you do with Too Many Zoos?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I feel like in some ways you have to have that approach, right? If you don't, then what are you reaching for? So, yeah, for us, we absolutely are trying to elevate our stuff to that sort of level where, you know, we're, you know, and some of those things are just out of the realistic nature of our, you know, of our grasp at this exact moment. We're not going to have $1 million pyrotechnic set up at our show. You know what I mean? There are certain things that are just constructs that you have to build to, to accomplish. But the approach should be the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the approach should be trying to make your product and your show as best as it can be for the audience that's paying a ticket for it.
And you'll get to your stadium.
Yeah, hopefully someday, you know. Someday soon.
The sooner the better. And you've also played with people like Wynton Marsalis and Dave Matthews Band, right?
Yep.
How do those kinds of things come to be?
Well, I had played with Wynton a lot of times in high school because of this festival called Essentially Ellington, which my high school competed in every year and won a few years and stuff like that. And with Dave Matthews Band, I played with them because I did a thing called the Grammy Band, which is like, you know, it's run by the Grammy Foundation, and essentially they choose 18 artists, 18 like young high school musicians, I should say, to come out for a week during the Grammys and rehearse for 3 days and then play some shows at, you know, like whatever, the Neil Diamond Remembrance Dinner, and then a show at a jazz club. And then we were fortunate that year, myself and seven other of the guys in the band were very fortunate to be chosen to play with Dave at the Grammys, which was really cool as a 17, 16-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we went and just rehearsed with Dave the day before and went to the Staples Center and did the dress run and then did the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, yeah, I mean, as a 16-year-old kid, it was kind of mind-blowing, but it was cool. It was really an awesome experience. And again, same thing, nothing but really nice things to say about Dave and his people, and that whole experience was amazing.
So maybe that's why you have Maybe that's why you have stadiums in mind, is because you're kind of like, you're used to them. You've experienced it. You know.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm used to them by any means, but I have done them, so I know what that feels like, and it is a really amazing feeling, so I want to achieve that on my own accolade at some point. That would be I think that's a good goal.
Yeah. Yep. Lofty. Well, and how did you slip into that Bitcoin documentary that I spotted you guys in?
That was like way back. You know, they filmed that and were working on that documentary for quite some time. I think nearly 4 years or so. Most of these things that happen, some of the things in the music industry are very official and very have that sort of nature to it, but a lot of it is very just casual. Some person just emailing or calling you or texting you or whatever, hey, my name is blah, blah, blah. I have this thing that I'm doing. Are you interested in being a part of it? And we just thought nothing ever happened with it. You know, they paid us and we just, to us, it was what, you know, whatever. You guys got your stuff and you paid us fairly, so fair trade, and obviously.
Do you remember what that doc is called?
I do not, no.
Yeah, me neither. If anybody wants to check it out, it's a Bitcoin documentary on Netflix. Is there anywhere else that outside of a show in a dark venue that people may have caught you or Too Many Zoos?
Mostly nowadays we're just playing venues and festivals. Beyond that, you know, we're planning certain things on our end that will eventually come to fruition. But I think for right now, yeah, it's mostly just clubs, festivals. I guess once in a while we went to the Subway for a few days a couple months ago. And, beyond that, we're mostly just touring in clubs and festivals.
How'd that go? Is that even more crazy now that you are touring a lot and people are starting to recognize you when you went into the Subway recently?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's kind of the, in some ways, the problem with it is that we really just want to go down there and play. And, now it's kind of become this thing where people will just stand there and, you know, if no one knows you, they won't stand there forever. They'll just like watch you for a second and leave. And that's what we want in some ways, because it's just a more natural progression of things for us. And it allows us to play more and interact with more people that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's in a lot of ways our goal when we go down there, and always has been. Is right, like you always want to find the next 10%. It's cool. We're very grateful for our fans and we love saying hi to them and thank you for supporting us. But yeah, there are times when it becomes a bit difficult to play in the Subway just because of the fans, you know, hanging around wanting to take pictures and I'm complaining about something that I really shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. There are worse problems.
Yeah, exactly. There are way worse problems than that.
Well, so this might be another good time for a break if you still have a couple minutes to talk.
Sure.
Okay, so let's play another song. Do you have another one in mind?
What about Missy?
Ooh, okay. It's like big bottom girl, something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Wow, that was a long time ago.
So anyway, that's a good one.
That's a fun tune.
Oh, and before we take that break, though, just another reminder for folks who are free on Monday, February 11th, Matt Doe, who is on the line right now, along with Too Many Zoos, which is a brass house band, trumpet, sometimes keys, right? Saxophone.
Yes.
And percussion. Yep. They'll be playing at the Blind Pig on Monday, February 11th.
Da booty 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 da boo da booty 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 da booty.
We're still here with Matt Doe with Hello. A couple more questions with me, the Liz. Maybe this is a good time to say that we are on WCBN FM Ann Arbor and streaming at WCBN.org. So Too Many Zoos raised more than $100,000 on Kickstarter to record your first full-length album. And one of the backer rewards that I noticed was attendance at what you called epic parties on both coasts. So can you tell me what happened at those epic parties?
Yeah, we just, you know, we did release shows. They were really fun. We did one in L.A. and one in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, both shows were fun. And that whole process, you know, is very difficult, but rewarding and a lot of fun. And it was cool, too, you know, for a bunch of young kids to have all that money to be creative with and to sink our time and money into a product that we were proud of. And yeah, I mean, that album and those records are super special to me and something we spent quite a bit of time working on. And I think in a lot of ways it was a super, for myself personally, a really developmental time for me as an artist and producer. So, I'm eternally grateful for that whole process.
And that was your album Subway Gods, right?
Yep.
And whatever became of the documentary that you made, documenting that process of recording it and producing it?
Yeah, we're still making that.
So it's coming.
But yeah, I mean, you know, those sort of things, like, so we hired the film crew who followed us around for whatever, 6 months or 8 months or something. And eventually you end up with 10 hard drives filled with footage. Which is awesome because you have all this footage, but in some ways it's completely overwhelming. And so we're trying to just take our time and find the right people to take on the project. And and make sure that it's done correctly and stuff like that. And but yeah, I mean, there is footage sitting on hard drives waiting to be attacked.
That's something to look forward to. That's good.
Yeah.
So why, yeah, we're talking about how it's tough for you to go back and play on the subway because, you know, the fans are everywhere. They're crawling all over you. So I guess I'm just wondering, why do you think that your music resonates with people?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I think in a lot of ways our music speaks to a wide variety of people. And I think that has to do just because of both the instrumentation of the group and the wide variety of influences that myself, Leo, and Sludge have taken with us individually as artists. And so I think for, you have certain groups of people that connect with certain sounds and certain feelings, and other people who connect with the other sounds. And you know what I mean? So I don't know exactly what makes people tick musically and artistically and what they like, but I know I can tell from seeing our fans and meeting them that there is a wide variety of different people. So it leads me to believe that there's also a variety of reasons for why people enjoy our music and come to our concerts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously there is the people I know for a fact who just enjoy loud dance music,
mm-hmm,
and just that sort of raucous energy. So there's always just going to be that group of people. And then there's always people who grew up playing music in band or are still in band and love hearing trumpet and saxophone and drums.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, there's certain groups of people that I think I could pinpoint and say that this is why they like it and blah, 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 blah. But for the most part, I'm not exactly sure,
mm-hmm,
why people like it for the reasons that they do.
Well, it's definitely a different application of some traditional musical instruments, you know?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's yeah, absolutely.
So when did you realize that you had a good thing going with Too Many Zoos?
I don't know. I think in some ways, as an artist, you almost never feel content in that way. I know that sounds depressing, but it's not. And it's actually kind of beautiful because it's what makes you go further. You know, Mike, when I was a kid and I had a dream of being a musician that toured around the world, where I did that 5 years ago. So I can't just stop doing stuff. So that feeling, your hopes and dreams change as you accomplish the ones that you set earlier in your life. And at least that is for me, right? Like, if I do something that I set out to do, I'm happy that I've done it, but I'm not content to stop at that point. I want to find something else. And I think that speaks true for myself and the rest of the guys in the band, is just taking that approach into life and into a life in music. And yeah, always finding the next thing to be excited about and the next thing to find inspiration from and create something great out of.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think that you as a trumpet player have done right to be where you are now?
I practiced a lot. And I was just ready when certain doors opened.
Uh-huh.
I think that in the music industry can be your biggest asset, is being ready for the opportunities, mm-hmm, you know, and having a game plan. Even if you change your game plan on the first day, being ready for those things mentally and physically and being able to do your job at a high level from day one, just because of the experience that you put into your work prior as a student of the craft, right? So,
mm-hmm,
I think it's like anything. You jump into something new and you very quickly sink or swim And sometimes that is a long process. Sometimes people don't have a career for 10 years and then become world famous. Not saying that doesn't happen, but it for me, I was just ready for certain things. I was good enough at playing, and in some, you know, I think I had to grow as a human being more than anything. I was always gifted at playing trumpet, so that came naturally. More being a functional human being took longer.
You became a good trumpet player before you became a functioning human being?
Yeah, I think I'm still on my way to becoming a functional human being in some ways. You know, it's just, you become a, it's like, again, the same thing. It's the same process that I'm talking about. You never are really content with yourself. You just want to get better. At least that's true for myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always want to become better, a better human and a better person and a better trumpet player and better at anything that I want to do and that I love being and doing.
Mm-hmm. As far as too many zoos, what do you think the band has done right to get where you are now?
Worked extremely, extremely hard and put in a ton of time and hours and sweat. And, you know, it's one thing to say, which I've heard so many people say, you know, I'm going to go down the subway and play music. And that is a wonderful concept on paper. And in some ways, and in a lot of ways, it's a wonderful concept and application, right? When you execute it the right way. But it takes a lot of time and energy that I think most people don't have the patience for. And in some ways that I did not have the patience for, that I had to grow to learn. Because, you know, it's like when you're doing what we were doing, which is just going down to the subway without a permit and waiting for spots to open, you have to have patience and a willingness to sit at the same spot for 6 hours and wait for a spot and never get one and go home and then wake up the next day and do the same thing. You know, that it is fleeting in so many ways. So it teaches you willpower and it teaches you what it means to really want something. And like I said, that's something I for sure had to learn. You know, because it's a lot more, I think that time when we were playing in the subway every day, that might have been more work in some ways than I've ever done in my life. And it was, and I had the most fun I've ever had doing it. But it's a test of your willpower and patience and desire to do something that you love because you love doing it. Mind you, it also helps that you're being paid to do that, right? There's also a million benefits to being in the subway. It's a paid rehearsal. Mm-hmm. People pay, you know, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies write checks to focus groups that for millions of dollars to get people in a room to tell them what they think about their product, right? We get paid to have that brought to us.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot, like, I mean, just on a business level, it is foolproof.
And it's very honest feedback.
Yeah, and exactly. There's no, why would they lie? There's no reason for them to lie.
Mm-hmm.
They either enjoy your music and stop and give you a dollar, or they just walk away and hold their hands to their ears. There's no reason for them to, there's no incentive for them to just lie.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it, for us, again, it was the combination of working our butts off. And then when we got to the point where we had opportunities and doors open for ourselves, we were ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we jumped at them and attacked them with full force. And, you know, whether it's luck or whatever, you just, some things you win and some things you're not going to win. You would be shocked at the amount of opportunities that I've been excited about that have had that just died, you know, immediately after whatever, however much time. And it's funny, that's what, returning to your question about the last thing that you've been excited about that I've told my friends. That's one of the things about the music industry that I've kind of taught myself is to never get excited about something until it comes out. until it's like on the internet for purchase, I never really get it. I try not to get excited about certain things just because I've seen so many times things just go by the wayside for whatever reasons, natural things, and I'm not upset about it or whatever. And maybe some of those things will resurge and be put out into the public, and that would be great. But, you know, in this industry, you're going to be, there's a lot more things that you hear that than the things that end up happening in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We're just one day at a time, mm-hmm. you know, just trying to like elevate our products and express who we are musically and have fun doing it.
So then what's next for Too Many Zoos besides coming to Ann Arbor on Monday, February 11th to the Blind Pig?
I like that. We're just, you know, touring a whole bunch like all year. And that's kind of normal. And then just working on records, you know, we're putting together a bunch of music and figuring out what we want to do with it. So that's pretty much the short answer.
All right. Well, good. And I'm looking forward to that documentary about making of Subway Gods.
I'll tell you what, so am I.
So would you like to end on a particular track? What's our finale song?
You pick.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't think of a third one.
I will. It might be, what is that? Maybe Turtle Dactyl?
Ooh, that's a good song. I like that one.
Okay. So maybe either that or Havana Banana is another really good one.
Hey, that's a good song too. I like that title. I forgot about that one.
Well, thank you so much again for taking time.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for giving me a call.
here we are, wrapping up our week's episode of The Living Raiders Show with special guest, the Liz and Matt Doe, the trumpet player of Too Many Zoos. To eliminate any confusion, I will remark again that the band Too Many Zoos visited Ann Arbor several weeks ago in February. So when we plugged the show, that was for a prior show. Don't get too excited for February 2020. Maybe they'll come again. Who knows? Anyway, thank you for listening to Living Raiders as you do every Wednesday at 5 to 6 p.m. You are listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Stay tuned.
is Ken Michalowski, and this is WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. And when I'm not at the bar during happy hour, I'm listening to T. Hetzel and the Living Writers on Wednesdays at 5 p.m.